Afternoon, I'm going to try to focus on the view on those portions of the Shulchan Aruch that will not be covered in the Chabur this Thursday, B'ez Hashem. I wanted to actually begin with a topic that we didn't discuss in Hilchos Hechsher Kelim, just for a moment, since and this is one of the most widely misapplied halachos. So I want to speak about it a bit. At the end of Siman Kuf Chaf Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch describes how to kasher a knife. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins that if you only want to use a knife that became treif for cold, the general rule being that even if it was bolea, something in the hot state, but if you only want to use it by often arai, in an occasional basis, so it's enough to just clean it well. That's generally the rule for kashering. If you want to use it by often kavua, so then the Ramah quotes, you make a gzera, that you shouldn't even use it for tzonein, by cleaning it off, lest you come to use it for hot. So the Mechaber writes, at least if either you're using a knife that became treif with hot, and you want to use it for tzonein in an arai fashion, or if the knife only became treif to start out with by using it for cold, let's say you cut a cold piece of steak with a milchik knife, or you cut a cold piece of cheese with a fleshik knife. So the Mechaber writes in the Kuf Chaf Aleph of Siv Zayin that the way you kasher that to be able to cut kosher with it, again, either kosher cold, ofen arai, or even kosher hot, if it only became treif with cold, you stick it in the ground 10 times in hard karka. No, it's a esar apamim karka kosher. And he says each neitza, each sticking into the ground should be in karka kosher, so you shouldn't stick it in the same spot. If the knife, on the other hand, became treif through hot and you want to use it for hot, so then bepashtus you need whatever kashering you need for that type of substance, either libun or hargola. So then the Mechaber throws in a curious psak at a Rambam. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know exactly why it should work, but that's where the Rambam reads the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, that it's enough to kasher a knife that became treif through hot by either by doing libun or by sharpening it. I don't know why sharpening should work, because sharpening the only takes away a klipa. So the Rambam apparently holds that when you cut hot food with a knife, it only goes in a klipa. So the Ramah, at least the Chachila, argues on that and says the Pshat, you normally would have thought that if a knife becomes treif through hot blia, so you got to get it out the same way, either through libun or through agol. At least the Chachila, you shouldn't rely on that Rambam to just sharpen it. What I wanted to speak about is the fact that the way you kasher cold a knife that became treif through a cold encounter with treif is through ne'itza. But it's only when you want to use the knife for cold ba'ofen arai, or it only became treif through cold, because the purpose of ne'itza is merely to remove the grease. There are some rishonim that indicate that it removes slightly more than the grease, but it certainly doesn't do a good job of kashering it. So what that means is that if the knife became treif through hot, you certainly cannot kasher it through ne'itza. That's a common mistake. That's one of these things that's dying a hard death. That the common notion is that when a knife becomes treif, no matter how it becomes treif, you stick it in the ground. Some have a tradition, quote unquote, to stick it in the ground for 24 hours. Some stick it in the ground maybe 10 times. But all that doesn't make sense unless the knife only became treif through cold, or if it became treif through hot and you're not interested in cutting hot now. As he pointed out, you're allowed to use that knife for ofen arai for cold. But leaving aside those details, if a knife became treif with hot and now you want to use it for hot, so the only way to kasher it, simply speaking, through hagol or libun, depending on how it became treif, or according to this mysterious Rambam, through sharpening. But you certainly cannot just stick it into the ground. So that's a mitzvah of farsim. That in order to kasher any kli that became treif through hot, including a knife, You have to use either Liban or Hagala, depending on how it became treif. It's not enough just to stick it into the ground. The 24 hours, I don't know where that came from. The Shulchan Aruch writes 10 times. I don't know where 24 hours came from. It's a confusion of the Eina Ben Yomo. Okay. People make a joke that in non-Jewish gardens they plant seeds, and in Jewish gardens they plant silverware. But that shouldn't happen too often, because you should never plant it, because it only works to stick, and it only works for a knife, and it only works if the knife became treif via cold. But if it became treif via hot, it doesn't help to plant it. Certainly doesn't help to plant it. It doesn't help to stick it in either. The poskim have an interesting discussion as to whether or not you could use steel wool. Because the whole purpose of the karka kosha is to remove the be'en. So that's a new shayla. So some poskim go straight out and say, yeah, steel wool is just as good, maybe even better. And others are reluctant to rely on steel wool. Rely on the tradition. Maybe the tradition is based on the fact, some Rishonim say, that sticking into the ground not only cleans it, it also removes a little beneath the surface. So maybe that's what that's based on. So that seems to be a machlok sapos in the Maisa, where they could use steel wool as a substitute for sticking it in the ground to kasher. What that means though, that even if you're kashering a knife from hot and you're using hagola, so we learned that before you kasher, you gotta clean it. So the poskim write that cleaning a knife, as is evidenced from this halacha here, takes a little more doing than cleaning a fork or a spoon. Because you see, in order to get off the grease, you need an itzah. So you got to do a very thorough cleaning of a knife before you kasher it, as opposed to other silverware, which is easier to clean. Okay, that's a little left over from before. Take a look. The last sif from Shulchan Aruch, Simchot Chafal, if it's all there. Shulchan Aruch does not take the pains to say, and this is the only time this works, he just says it. He assumes that you know that, but it seems to be a notion out there that sticking to the ground always works for knives, but that's not true. Yeah?
For when you do need to the karaka, must it be after 10 times, or that's...
I thought so. It's less than the mechaber. It's, I guess, certainly a minimum, not a maximum. But I think a minimum. Okay.
Was it ever resolved about the Gemara itself that says he cut off a piece of an esrog or a lemon?
That's one of the makaros. Oh, because it's davar charis.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the mechaber, based on that Gemara, presumably holds that neitzah works even to subsequently cut a davar charis.
Yeah. So that would right. Not be equal to hot, but it'd be one step above cold.
No? Right. So that might be assuming that sticking to the ground does a little more. Right. I have to recheck that to see that well, but your point is well taken. That's the Gemara in the end of Avodah Zarah about Shvor Malka. Okay, the transition between Hagala and Tefillas Kelim is, as we mentioned briefly in the Chabura, the first Chabura on Tefillas Kelim, is if you buy a tray for Kli from a non-Jew, so you have to kasher it and you have to be tovel it. The question is, in which order? So the Gemara and the Mishnah, based on the Mishnah, seems to indicate that the proper order is first Hagala or Liban, and then Tvila. And what if you switched? So the Rishonim have a dispute as to whether or not that works or not. Some Rishonim use the Lashon. I erroneously attributed to the Ra'ah in Leif Chabur. It's not the Ra'ah, it's other Rishonim. Some Rishonim have a Lashon that does not work, it's like Tovo Sheretz V'yado, which is similar to the language of the Ra'ah regarding Geirus. That's where the Ra'ah appears. So some say that you dafka have to have a gola first and then tefillah. Again, we're talking about you bought a kli from a non-Jew. If the Jewish kli became treif, you don't have to be tovel it altogether, just have to kasher it. But if you bought it from a non-Jew, first have to kasher it, then be tovel it. B'di'eved, so some Rishonim say it does not work. They quote this the name of the Rashbam, it's a tovel, sheretz biyodo. And some Rishonim say it does work, b'di'eved. The Mechaber quotes two deis. And I guess based on the normal rule of Stam v'achach machlokis in Mechaber speak, shall we say? So he seems to be passing l'kula, that if you are tovel first and then you are magil, b'di'eved it will be mutter. And then he quotes the Yesh Yomrim that you should be tovel it again. So the Mechaber sounds like he's being makel because he quotes the first opinion Stam. The Shach writes that you should be machmir to be tovel it again. So I saw in certain Svarim, I forget where I saw this, but that's because we assume that Tefillas Kelim is deraisa. So if you might have blown the Tefillas Kelim here, So you have to be tovel it again. And what if it's glass, which is only the Rabbanan? Well, at least the Mechaber holds, you don't have to kasha glass. So such a situation would never come up. And Ashkenazim say you can't kasha glass. So such a situation won't come up either. Okay. There's a little bit of flavor that emerges here as to if you go with that approach of Sheretz, so how literally you take that. So the Shach here quotes in the name of the Levush as follows. We learned earlier that if you have a knife, let's say, or a bowl, let's move away from the knives, a bowl, that was bolea in hat. So if you want to use that for hat, you got to kasher it with a hagola. Let's say you want to use it only for cold. Like, you know, a lamdan goes into the kitchen and wants some ice cream and they're out of milk bowls, so he takes the fleshka bowl and puts in some ice cream. And when they start screaming at him, he says, don't worry, I know what I'm doing. He says, well, open a rye, it's allowed. That's the famous story they quote from the Brisker Rebbetzin and all the other Rebbetzins, that you and your Yeridei are going to trade for my kitchen. These are the rules. Fleishig is fleishig, milchik is milchik. But that's, there are more quotes. The Ofen Arai, you're allowed to use it, even a treif kli, all the more so, milchik and fleishig, the Ofen Arai for cold. So here I get this beautiful bowl from the non-Jew, let's say it's metal, make it simple. All the bowls usually come in metal, but in terms of kashering, let's call it metal. And now I want to use it, but Ofen Arai for cold. So I'm allowed to. But wait a second, I need tefillas kelim. So I dip it in the mikveh. So as far as my shimush now is concerned, there's no sheretz. There's no, the bli is irrelevant to me because I'm only using it for kol v'ofen arai. And let's say originally that's all I decided. I was only going to use it occasionally for kol, and I was never going to use it for hat. So the levush has this kula that we go by relative sheretz. That since vis-a-vis the tashmish of tzonein, there's no sheretz here. So if I dip it in the mikveh then, before I use it for cold, so that was nitar, tumaso, or tumasakum, whatever. And now even if I change my mind, and now I want to use it for hat, it's already nitar. That's the shach quotes the name of the bush. It's a chiddush, because you would have said that shrotzim operate, however that analogy is, sheretz v'yirav more in absolute terms. There's bliya here, with respect to hat. And indeed, in the Sefer Agolas Kalim, actually no, you don't have to go so far, you can go to the Pesachei Tshuva. He quotes the Tiferes Lamosha that doesn't like that relative sheretz idea. The sheretzim operate based. You understand what I mean by the relative sheretz? That if you're only using it for kol, so with respect to that tashmish, you don't have to be magalit. So who cares about the order? As of now, I don't have to be magalit at all. So if I decide later to use it for hat, the fact that I was tovelit already, it was already nitzpas, it already took hold, and there's no need to be tovelit again after I kasher it in order to use for hat. And the Tiferes Lamosha, according to Pesachei Tshuva, Sefkot Dalet, he views Sheratzim apparently in absolute terms, that Lamaisa, with respect to Hat, there's a Sheretz in here, so you got to kasher it first, always. That's Chiddush number one. Chiddush number two is the Dogma Ravava, which is quoted in Sefkotan Gimel. Maybe a greater Chiddush, a different type of Chiddush, that if it's an Einab and Yomo, so it's not a Sheretz anymore. It's not going to ask for the food. So if you tova l'kli, it's an Einab and Yomo, even though you have to kasher it, it's not a problem to switch the order. It's also a chiddush, even though the Pesachei Tshuva does not quote any cholkim, but there in the Sefer Agolas Kelim, he quotes the cholkim on that Dogma Rebava. Also, because it's true that B'dieved is not going to aser, but still might be viewed as a sheretz. That might be tali on the machlokis, which you think Rav Shechter Shlita develops in his Sefer, as to whether or not something becomes nosin tam lufgam in the kli, or only after it leaves. If you hold, it becomes nosin tam lufgam in the kli, so it's not a sheretz anymore. If you hold, it only becomes nosin tam lufgam once it goes into the food, so kol zman it's in the kli, to sheretz. Either way, it's a machlokas aposkin whether or not you could be makel to be tovel an einav and yomo that you bought from a non-Jew before you did the hagola, according to that day that you have to have tefillah after hagola. So the dogma of is makel, and the sefer goes kelim quotes those acholik. So the two issues about this, the order. Yeah.
Would you say that the Levush is based on the idea that it's like a garrison there, he's not worried about Blias, the machlokas between if tefillah is done for garris or if it's done for...
It might be based on that, too.
Based on that.
Right, you might be able to explain the whole machlokas about whether the order matters based on that.
Right. But
if you view it as a Gemara Heksher, the way we discussed, some have that Lashon Gemara Heksher, you should need kashering first. Okay. Let's now move, so that's the transition between Hagalah and Tvila, which is in Sima Kof Chaf Aleph. Let's move to Kof Chaf. Okay, starting with the Sif Aleph discusses the materials, which Be'ezus Hashem I hope to cover fairly thoroughly in the Chabura, so I'm going to gloss over that for now, because I cover it in the broader context. I want to go to Sif Beis, which is the method of the tefillah, which I really briefly alluded to. I spoke a little bit at length about the basket, an important Indian. I wanted to discuss more of the method of the tefillah itself. Yes?
That this seems to run opposite to something that we learned when it comes to like using the snap bottle, where he said it doesn't matter what your intent is, even if you use it over a long-term basis. It matters what the intent was with the manufacturer. Now we're saying when it comes to this using Bachilas Alayim,
the definition.
Your intent is made.
I think with respect to whether it's a kli or not, so you have to decide in objective terms, this a kli. And when you decide to drink the Snapple bottle forever and ever from that Snapple bottle, so you made it into a kli. That was the svara. But over here, this idea of sheretz is, since I have the levush reasons that I have a right, I don't want to use it for hot. So what do you want me to kasher? I don't want to use it for hot. But I'm not allowed to eat without being tovel. So I'll tovel it. So the tefillah is already in nitpas. So that's his svara. Okay. It's a little bit of a complicated topic. Very long taz here, geshmaka taz. So just try to give you the bottom line. It's instructive to see the at least the Mishnah that it's all based on to help understand it well. The Mishnah Masechta Mikvos Perek Ches has a machlokis between the Chachamim and Reb Shimon as to how to solve the problem that if you want to help somebody out and hold them in the mikveh. So how do you make sure that your hand is not going to be a chatzitza between the mikvah water and the part of the body that you're touching? So the Chachamim say that you wet your hands. Hidiach es yadav b'mayim tahorim. Rav Shimon argues in some way and says, loosen your hand. Yarpes yadav. So there is a machlokis or rishonim as to how to read this machlokis. Is Rav Shimon being machmir or is he being mekel? Does the Chachamim hold that both methods are valid? You could either wet your hands, in which case, very very briefly, you create some kind of water seal between your hand and the body, so that's considered like mei mikveh once the whole the tovel's body is in there. And you could also loosen your hands so that the mikveh water could flow in. Because you're holding it very loosely, so it's not a tight connection. You'll be able to squeeze in between your fingers and the person being told. So some Rishonim learned that the Chachamim hold both methods work. And Rav Shimon holds only the loose method works. Some Rishonim learned that the Chachamim hold only the wetting method works, the Hadacha method, where you wet your hands first. And Rav Shimon is being makel and saying that both methods work. So that's a machlokis or Rishonim. Could be you're right. I didn't do an exhaustive search of Rishonim, but they mention on the page they only have those two sheets. Either Rishonim's a Mekel or a Machmir, not exclusive.
Two methods?
Two methods to wet your hand first, or to just hold loosely, even though you didn't wet your hand first. So, La Halacha, the Mechaber accepts the position of those Rishonim who maintain is against the Rambam, who's of the Machmirim, who holds that Rishonim is a Mekel, and the Chachamim only allow Hadacha. The Mechaber Paskins, like those Rishonim, the Rashba, and others, who say that both methods work, because they, meaning the Chachamim, according to the Chachamim, everyone Paskins like the Chachamim. The question is what the Chachamim say. So many Rishonim learn, and the story of the Mechaber Paskins, that the Chachamim hold both methods work. Both wetting your hand first, and also holding it loosely. So that's the Mechaber writes, that the same thing would apply not only to Tevilas Adam, but also to Tevilas Kalim, that either you hold it loosely, or you wet your hands first. Lechleach yadav b'mayim tchila. So, Shalom al Yisrael, that's the Pesach of the Mechaber, and we should be able to move on. But the Shach and the Taz, well, starting with the Ramah actually, they shoot down each of these Aterim one by one. So, it goes as follows. The Ramah writes, it's not enough to wet your hands, because what's going to happen is you wet your hands, whether you do it in the faucet or whether you do it in the mikveh, and then once your hand goes out, now that water is mayim tlushin. It's not in the mikveh anymore. So now when you're going to take those wet hands and hold on to the object and then dip it into the mikveh, it's not going to help, because the mikveh water is surrounding whatever, 99% of the kli, but your hands with the non-mikveh water is surrounding 1% of the kli. So the Rama writes that that etza of wetting your hands does not help. Ah, but the Mishnah says it does work. So the Rama writes, quoting the Mordechai, it's a question whether Rama accurately quoted the Mordechai or not, but he claims to be quoting the Mordechai, that you have to wet it in May Mikveh. So everybody asks on the Rama, what do you mean you wet it in May Mikveh? You can wet it in May Mikveh, and then you take your hand out, and then it's going to be not May Mikveh anymore. So the way the Mefarshim explained the Rama, as Amati Yohanasan explains that way, and Papastis DeGro also understood the Rama that way too, it means that you can't stick your hand in, take it out, and then dip the kli. You got to keep your hand in, and then you take your other hand and drop it into your second hand that's already in the mikveh water. So then the kli is totally surrounded by mikveh water. This is the relation of the Rama, Shelech Leach Yadav B'mei Mikveh. So b'pshuto, it sounds like you put the hand into the mikveh, take it out. So the Mefarshim point, that can't mean the meaning of the Rama. You're not gaining anything by that. It means you keep your hand in the mikveh. So that's the first attack against the two kulas of the Mechaber, that the Rama rules that the second, the way the Mechaber has it, the second ability here of solving the chasitza problem, to wet your hands, it doesn't help to wet your hands b'mayim plushim, you have to wet your hands in the mikveh itself. We'll get to the psak at the very end. I just want to present the shittas now. The shach, so he shoots down the first kula, the fact that you could leave your hands loose. Why? Because he's choshesh for the shittas Rambam. The Rambam holds that the chachamim hold that only wetting your hands work. Loose does not work. Why? Because there's a gzera that you might hold it tight. And even though the Mefarshim point out that a lot of times loose things help, but here we have a bar das that's holding on to something, so it's a little hard to hold on loosely. You don't want it to fall, so you'll be tempted to hold on tight. That's the way the Rambam holds, and the Shach says that Hayois, that many a machmir for that Rambam regarding Hilchos Nida, even though the Mechaber himself was not, but many a machmir that Rambam, so he wants to be machmir here too. The Pesachei Tshuva quotes from the Teferes L'Moshe that maybe the reason that the Mechaber was not choshesh for the position of the Rambam, at least over here, is because here the stakes are not so high. Because we're not dealing with a possibility of an Issacharis, of Be'ilos Nida. We're dealing with a Bitla Mitzvah of Tvila, which B'dieved, the food, if it's cooked in such a pot, remains kosher. Since the stakes are not so high, so it won't be choshesh for the position of the Rambam. That's the yeshiv that the first Moshe gives here as to why the Mechaber, at least regarding Tfilas Kalim, is not Machmir that Rambam. La Halacha, so certain Sfarim, in deference to the Shach, don't like that Eitzah of holding it loosely, but Meikar Adin, it seems like that Mechaber Paskin, the holding loosely works, so if you hold it loosely, it's a valid method. And for the same money, if you do a method that makes everyone happy, so obviously that would be better. So now let's go back to the issue of wetting the hands.
Yeah. So holding loosely still means you must release your grip at some point.
No.
For the water to get in between.
No. Very loose. It means that loose enough such that the water could stick it to this, like, let's say, for example, if I was holding this like this, I'd be able to stick a piece of paper in between. So the water acts like that, it slips in between.
But so I understand. The water is not going to...
A very loose touch.
The reality is the water is not getting in there unless you let go. Correct?
I don't know. This is a Mada topic. You gotta, because the Madoyim point out that whenever you touch something, there's always space in between, right? So if you touch something loosely and make an experiment and you take that out and then see whether there's any wetness on that, there would never be wetness on that. And they're assuming that when you hold it very loosely, that the water is going to be able to slip in. I don't know what else to say. I see your question. Yeah.
According to that, would you agree with me that sometimes when we used to do tefillah, there used to be stickers, and like if someone forgot to take the sticker off, after they did the tefillah, the water would lift the sticker off. So obviously the water got behind the sticker, no?
Okay. Listen in. I don't know if that's true either. But okay, good. So there you go. So there you go. You don't buy it. All right. Shine. I have to ask Rabbi Tendler to do an experiment in the chem lab. Okay, we'll work it.
And it's wet in that area.
But it's clear you're not letting go, because that's a different kula. This is not the kula of Mechaber. Okay, let's get back to the wetting of the hands. So the Rama writes that it has to be mei mikveh. The problem with that Rama is that that's not what it sounds like from the Mishnah, because the Mishnah uses a lashon Hediach yadav tchila. Sounds like you got them wet. If it means mei mikvah, so it should say v'hu she toval yado tchila. Hediach sounds like you just got it wet. So that's what the Taz and maybe the Gra too. I'm not sure which direction the Gra is going in this specific thing, but the Taz for sure, he's saying that the Makar of the Ramah is a Mordechai, and the Mordechai never meant what the Ramah said. The Mordechai simply meant that what the Ramah's approach certainly works. It certainly works. But that's not what the Chachamim are saying. When the Chachamim say that you could wet your hands first, they mean kipshuto, that you just wet your hands and then it works. Ah, so what is the Mordechai being machmir for? Because the Mordechai holds as follows. Hopefully I presented in a way that's understandable. There are two ways to get mikvah water into an area where mikvah water is not currently there. Either by it flooding the area, by it getting there, literally, or by it kosherizing the treif water that is currently there, the mayim she'uvim, or the mayim plushim, which is sometimes called hashaka, sometimes called zriya. So the two ways of getting mikvah water there. So if I hold it loosely, there the method that's being used to get the mikvah water into that area is the first method, that it should flood that area, notwithstanding the question that was just asked. If my hands are wet, so the wet hands have puzzle water on them. So my angle of attack here is not to get mikvah water there, but to make those drops that are on my hand kosher, to be transformed to become mikvah water through whatever you want to call it, hashaka or zriya. So the standard the psak and the mechaber, which is the position of many rishonim, the medayik, the Taz later in Hilchos Nidah's medayik, is certainly the position of the Rambam, learn that even if you have a tight grasp of that area, nonetheless, since you have mikvah water to the right and mikvah water to the left and to the top and the bottom, so that's called hashaka with respect to the mikvah water that's underneath the drops of your fingers, and that makes those drops kosher. So now, even though it's not actually touching because you have a tight grip, so nonetheless it still makes that mikvah water kosher. That's the psak of the Rambam and others. The Mordechai that the Ramah was quoting, which the Taz says that it was misquoting, the Mordechai never meant that you have to have your hand submerged under the water, but rather he was just being mazir that when you use the method of the wetting your hands first, you shouldn't hold it so tightly. What do you mean you shouldn't hold it so tightly? If I'm holding it loosely, so then I already plug into cooler number one, that the mikvah water is going to flood it directly. So that's what the Taz quotes, is an ocean called a Dibuk Beinoni. It's not loose and not very tight, but just right. In other words, what does that Dibuk Beinoni do? It's enough to allow the mikvah water to touch the ends of the water on your hand. It's called Ashoka, right? But it's not enough to flood the whole area so that mikvah water should be totally surrounding the kli. So la halacha, according to the Taz, and he recommends to be machmir for this Mordechai, even though it's a machlokas rishonim, but he recommends to be machmir, that when you use the method of wetting, you should not hold it tightly. Okay? Clear? According to the mechaber, who doesn't make this kind of distinction, which seems to be the approach of the Rambam, as the Taz points out later in Hilchos Nidah. So hashaka in this regard works even with a tight grasp. And according to the Mordechai, that the Ramah, according to the Taz, was not quoting correctly, you need a dibuk beinoni. So here too, la halacha, since the Taz holds that way and the Mordechai holds that way, so the Svarim recommend that if you're using the methodology of wetting your hands, you shouldn't hold it so tightly. Yes?
Would this be an issue even without hands, like what we were saying on Thursday about the basket?
Okay, well, I'll touch upon that in a second. And then if you still have the question, ask again. So the Gra, just for the record, the Gra held like the simple reading of the Mechaber, that even a Dibuk Chazak does not affect the Hashoka here, it's fine. As long as you wet your hands, even if you hold on tight, it's not a problem. So the halacha, even notwithstanding the lenient position of the Gra, so many poskim are machmir too. When I say many poskim are machmir, I'm getting it from the Sefer Tevilas Kalim and the Sefer Chelkas Binyamin, that it's better to hold it with a Diva Beinoni if you're using this method. So another nafkamina of this machlokas would be the following. The Shach at the end of Simon Kuvchov writes that the Tashlam of the Dinam of Tevilas Kalim are found in Reish Aleph and Reish Beis. So yeah, don't forget to review Reish Beis too. It's a, not totally, but at least partially on the Makoros. So, so in the Simon Reish Beis, the Mechaber speaks about dipping a kli, the Ramah actually in Tzivov, Mutta Litbol Kli B'toch Kli. And he has details about how wide the outer Kli has to be. It has to be at least Kishoferes Hanot. So here I have a Kli inside a Kli, and I'm dipping both together. Well, I have to make sure that the inner kli, which I'm trying to be tovel, is going to be surrounded by water. So if it's not heavy, so you could assume that it's going to float around a little in the water, it'll be totally surrounded. But let's say it's a heavy kli. Let's say I fill a pot with water, and I put it inside a laundry basket there, and then I lowered a laundry basket in. It's very heavy. It's not going to float around. So the point of contact between, let's say the laundry basket is dry. So the point of contact between the heavy pot that I filled with water before I put it in the mikveh and the laundry basket is going to prevent mikveh water from going in. And here you have no coolest because it wasn't wet originally and it's not loose. So that's no good. So if it's heavy, you got to make sure that you don't do that. It has to be light. But let's say I fill up the laundry basket with water. Although, let's forget about laundry basket, another kli. I fill it up with water, and then I take another kli that's filled with water, or another heavy kli, and I put it in there. And then I dip the whole contraption into the mikveh. So if you take the approach that wetting the hands works, because that's hashaka, regardless of whether it's tight or not, but since there's some kind of water sealed there, you're okay, which is the position of the Rambam and the Gra, so that's okay. Right, you see the parallel, because there's a water seal there. But if you take the approach of the Taz and the Mordechai, that's not a Dibuk Beinoni, that's a Dibuk Chazak. So then that wouldn't work either. So the only time it would work, it was mamish light. It's able to float around. So the Gra, together with referring to Simon Reish Beis, points out that'll be another nafkamina of this dispute. So La Halacha, based on the fact that we point out the poskim into machu for the taz, so it would be improper to be tovel a kli that way. So getting back to the laundry basket, let's say you wet the laundry basket first, and then you put a heavy pot on top of it. So according to the taz, not good. You shouldn't do that with heavy pots. Probably better to do it with your hand and hold either b'rafui or b'dibuk beinoni. Okay.
So if you hold the kli and the basket's already in the water, you drop it and it goes down in. Is that still korach gavra that the basket, the kli is falling?
You don't need a korach gavra, but it's certainly good. It's but kavana. Maximum you need kavana. You don't even need kavana. But even if you machm for the bach, you need kavana. Certainly kavana. So what I just mentioned is, if you want to avoid this whole issue, you have a heavy kli, so it's kind of like the kula ramah in a certain sort. You either put your hand or the basket in the water and then throw the kelim in one by one, so then the revach has no problems going to anybody. Okay, so just in summary, you have the two kulas of the mechaber, rafui and you wet your hands first. The shach picks on the first one, the ramah picks on the second, and the taz qualifies the second that you can only use lechleach yadav b'dibuk beinoni. When you tovel in those baskets, so let's leave aside the laundry baskets, it's a little more complicated, as we really pointed out, because there's not holes all over the place, but the standard metal baskets, they have many mikvos, so that's not halacha of kli b'toch kli, because it's not even a kli to start out with. But as we pointed out, there's still what to worry about if the kelim are not light, if you're machmer for this taz, that even though it's wet usually, because it's going in and out of the mikveh, so if you do have a heavy pot, it would be advisable to lift it up a little bit in the mikveh, holding it with a divuk beinoni, so it gets totally surrounded. Now, if you look in the Chelkas Binyamin, you know, chumris you could always have, because it comes up in Hilchos Nidah too. There are those that combine all the chumris together and therefore they advise just letting go for a second. Okay, so that's, but it does not, strictly speaking, require it. But letting go would be the equivalent of dropping it into the basket. There's nothing to be gained by letting go as opposed to dropping it into the basket. But there are those who let go, but lechora you could get away with a little bit less than that. Okay. I think, in summary, that covers that topic of the tefillah itself. Yeah.
How are you not gaining by if you let go and you don't use the basket? Are you gaining? Because you don't have a chashash.
Well, if you're using the basket while it's submerged and then you dunk things in.
No, assuming you don't use the basket, you take the ladle, you let go for a split second.
Yeah, yeah. So that would be.
You still have the circumference around the.
That would be berevach. But lamaisi, you can get away with a little less because you could follow the divik benini approach according to the Taz from the Mordechai. Because there is a Mishnah that says lechleach yarav tchila. Unless you hold like the Ramah's extreme reading of the Mordechai, the way the Taz puts it, that the Mishnah never meant the wetting your hands works. It only means if you stick your hand in the mikveh, then it works. Okay, so that is correct. But I thought the poskim generally accept the Taz's reading of the Mordechai over the Ramah's. But you're correct. That's why there are some who let go. I guess in deference to the reading of the Ramah.
That's without the basket.
Without the basket. There's another Eitzah where you could follow the Ramah, even if you want to follow the Ramah. Without having to stick your hand in the mikveh first and then stick the kli into your hand, you have the following. You stick your hand in and then you take it out with another one, and before you take it out with the other one, you release the grip of the first. That's the equivalent. Right? No, and even if I don't let go. People don't want to let go because they really pointed out they'll have a lot of broken kelim in the mikveh. But okay, so that's why I have a net. Because it goes as follows. Here I have my kli, I dip it in. So now I have a problem because this area is not tovil. And even if I wet my hands, but the Ramah is choshesh that wetting in the hands is not good enough. But now if I stick my second hand in, so now it's in the mikveh already. So then I grasp, and then I release. So before I take it out, this is now surrounded, even according to the Ramah, with mikveh water. Now when I take it out, I'm home clear. So that's another way. If you're jittery, you have your $100 glass vase and you really don't want to drop it, and it's heavy, so you're worried about the basket, so that would be a way to mekayim alashitas. All is a relative term, because there's this Mari Bruna that the Shach quotes in Hilchas Nida that holds even that's no good, but okay, that's a little, maybe in Hilchas Nida in Machmir, but here I think that's probably not a normative chumrah. Okay. The Mechaber in Simon Reish Beis points out that you could have kalim, let's say put silverware in your basket. You don't have to worry so much if the silverware touches each other because they're light, so they'll float around. You shouldn't stack them up very high. If there's any chash that you're not going to get mikvah water all over, so that's a problem. But if they're loosely touching each other, it's fine. And that's as opposed to Hagala, where we saw that touching is a problem for Hagala, because we're worried that the bubbles won't circulate. But with mikveh water, all you need is a thin layer. So it's not really such a problem if the light kalim touch each other in the mikveh. A little more about the Maisa Tvila. The Mechaber Paskins at the very end of Simu Kuf Chof, that a katan and a non-Jew are both kosher for the Maisa Tvila itself. But they have no nemonis. They're not believed. An akum, because not believed in areas of Issa v'Heter, and a katan, because not a bardas. Okay, so that maybe you could squeeze out, depending on the rules of Mesiach Lefi Tumo, right, that long shach at the beginning of Tzadi Ches, or so, Tzadi Tes. I'm not so familiar with when Mesiach Lefi Tumo works. I don't know. Mesiach Lefi Tumah probably not going to work here either, because he doesn't know the rules of kashrut of tovling. So with a katan who has no nemanis and with a non-Jew who has no nemanis, the only way to make it work is to be there. If you are there and you watch him, so then you're okay. The shach adds that even if it fell into the mikveh by itself, also is good. Why? Because the Rishonim quote two reasons why a katan is okay. Either because the gadol who's standing there is training the katan to have kavana, a assuming that you need kavana, or tvilas kelim does not need kavana. Those are the two ways of understanding why a tvila of a katan is good if you're there. So the Shach and the Taz both write that the Stima Samachaber indicates that we have accepted the second interpretation, namely that tvilas kelim does not need kavana. So based on that, the Shach writes, of course, b'di'evid, because you're going to lose the bracha, that if a kli falls into the mikvah, it's kosher. You don't have to be tovel it again. So the katan and the non-Jew are not neman, but they can technically do it. It doesn't have to be done by Israel. In terms of the nemanus, so the Pesachei Tshuva writes that maybe we don't believe a katan because it's deraisa. But if it's derabanan, such as glass, as we'll see more by Riches on Thursday, so maybe you could believe him. So that's what some poskim do rely on that. But the Primigodim, as quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva, is not so convinced about that either, because here he's starting out with a cheskes iser, right? Because the kli started out on tovel, so maybe even on a derabanan we shouldn't believe a katan. But nonetheless, he's willing to be makel if the katan's bar mitzvah, even though we don't know that he has two saris, rely on chazaka derava together with a tefillah of a kli skluchas. Okay, this is halacha that not so many people are aware of. They send their children to do tefillah skalim, at least by metal. It's very important to be makbid, that someone should see what they're doing. It's also the katan knows this whole shtick with the wetting of the hands and everything, and if he uses the basket, you're pretty okay. But if he dips it in his hand, he might blow it. So, but even if he doesn't blow it, if he comes home and says, Asisi kachol asher tivisani, but he's under bar mitzvah, he's not believed. So you have to make sure that there's an adult there watching. If there is an adult there watching, the katan can make the bracha. As long as he's a gil chinuch, he knows what he's saying.
If you wanted to adopt a kavana and fell in by accident, could you then say, it's not kosher because I want to say the bracha and do it again?
You can't make a bracha again.
Unless it fell in, you
can't show it. There is an Eitz V'Heter that's quoted by the Shach in Sif Katan Chaf, who has this notion that if you dipped it originally one way and then something else happened, if you didn't have kavana for that original, then another method, so then you can make a bracha. But the later post can point out that doesn't make sense. It's tovel, it's tovel. There is room to be machmir, to be tovel again, believe bracha, because the Bach wants to paskin that it needs kavana. So it's not a wild chumrah to be tovel again, but certainly no bracha. Usually, if you have a pot, a spoon that'll help, that'll work. But with a pot, even if it falls in, it's going to float and it's not going to get submerged. So you're still able to save your bracha. Okay, the lashon of the mechaber concerning tvilas akom is only b'di'evit. So the Taz writes, there's nothing wrong with his tvila even lechachila, but you're going to miss the bracha because you can't make a bracha on the non-Jew's tvila. You make a bracha only on a ma'isa. That's why the Taz writes that if you're being tovel the dishes also, together with your non-Jewish maid or whatever, or a helper, so then no problem. You'll make the bracha, and that'll go on his tefillah too. So the Chelkis Binyamin, the other sefer in Hilchos Tefillos Kelim, says, that's not so pashut either. Because you want your bracha to be chal on all of the tefillahs. The Akum's maisim, not maisa ha-mitzvah. So how is that going to go on him? So he's mafakbek a little bit on that Taz, that... preferable not to use a non-Jew at all for Tvilas Kelim, because you're going to miss some aspect of the bracha. But the Taz himself writes that as long as you bring Tovel one Kli, then it's fine. It's at Avanaf Kamina that, as we'll see, Be'ez Hashem on Thursday a little more, I really alluded to it. If you're a caterer and you're following the stringent position, which many poskim say is not a stringent position, it's the correct position, that you have to be Tovel your dishes. So, go be Tovel, thousands of dishes. Okay, good, take some time. So if you have an abundance of Jewish workers, fine. But let's say you only have a few, and to get it done well, you got to take along Tom, Dick, and Harry. So that would have to be navigated with this Taz, that maybe it would help if the Jew is being told at least one Kli, so he could have the non-Jews help. According to that pick book of the Chelkas Binyamin, it's really not advisable, because the bracha is not going to really be nitpas in any. The Mechaber writes in Sif Yud Beis that you have to be told the whole Kli, including the handle. And the poskim write, A, that's because of chatzitza, B, because it's part of the kli, and notwithstanding the fact that the Chelkas Binyamin writes otherwise, it's generally assumed that if the handle is not chayiv in tefillas kelim, such as it's plastic, and it is currently off, then it need not be toveled. In other words, let's say I have a frying pan, and the base is metal and the handle is plastic. So kolzman is mechuber, all of it has to go in the mikvah. So let's say that someone unscrewed the handle, whatever. Or let me give another example. Let's say you have a, this is more common, you have a blender. So a blender typically nowadays has a plastic top and a plastic body and a plastic bottom and a rubber ring seal and a metal blade. So the poskim write, you want to put it all together and be tovel that way, it's perfectly acceptable. But let's say I want to be fancy, I just want to be tovel exactly that which is chayiv. So I take the whole thing apart and then I tovel just the metal. So the poskim write that although the first method is preferable, but the second method is equally valid. So the Chelkas Ben Yamin had a little pickbook over here. He says, well, the Mechaber writes that you got to be tovel the yad of the kli. Why do you got to be tovel the yad of the kli? So if you learn, it's only because of chatzitza, because it's part of the kli if it's attached. Okay, so then fine. But he says that maybe anything that's mischaber to a kli, then that is chayiv, so that also becomes chayiv. So what's it going to help to be tovel only the blade of the blender when you're going to reattach it to the plastic kalim and now the whole thing's going to be chayiv? Okay, I spoke to Rabbi Willig about this. He wasn't so into that chumrah. But the Sefer Tevilas Kalim is not machmir that way. The Sefer Tevilas Kalim holds that if you just tovel the parts that are chayiv and tevil is also good, although he prefers putting it all together first and then being tovel it. So that comes up a lot when a lot of pots come prefab. You know, you got to screw on the handle first, and sometimes the handle or the knob that allows you to lift it off is plastic. So, bottom line, you could probably get away with just being tovel the metal. But it's much better to put it all together for a few reasons. First of all, because it is chumrah here. Second of all, the post can recommend that it's better to put it together anyway based on achshash of a sugya and a sukkah about mitzvah shel prakim, how to be tovel it. And third of all, a lot of times there's a screw on the bottom. And that screw is metal, and that screw oftentimes comes into contact with the food if it's a lid. It's not so pushy that screw is going to be putter from tefillah. So it's always better to put together a whole pot or whatever device it is first in the way you use it and tight, and then be tovel it kacha. That's the safest approach going to all the poskim. Other approaches are going to be somewhat mifupak, even though probably Mekar Adin would be fine as long as you tovel the metal parts. Yeah.
I might have thought that in terms of surface area of the pot, if you take off the plastic handle and you dip the pot as it is with a screw in it, you get a better coverage of the entire cleat and the tefillah.
Without the handle?
Without the handle.
Okay, but you don't have to worry about that, because the way the cleat is used, that's not called a chatzitza. Mm-hmm. So, again, exactly why the Sefer Tefillah's Kalim recommends putting it all together first, I'm not sure, because he admits that if you didn't put it apart and you only were tovel the metal parts and the glass, then you're okay. I'm not sure why he recommends the lechachila. It's something to do with a sugi and sukkah, the machlokes near Belezer and the chachamim. But how to be tovel a mita that became tummy? Are you tovel it prokim, or are you tovel it only put together? You have to first take it apart, and then you have to put it together. Okay, the bottom line is, yeah, once it is assembled, you tovel everything. And then you have to worry about chatzitza. So a little bit here you have in Sifri Gimel, you have to remove rust and any other dirt and stickers, etc., all have to be removed. Rabbi, everybody has the same joke. Rabbi Neuberger and Rabbi Tendler and the Sefer Chelkas Ben Yamin, they all point out, it's not a joke, it's a kind of joke, I guess the way I was trained. That you don't have to remove stickers if you want them there. Because if the sticker says, I don't know all the ins and outs, Walther, Waltham, China, whatever, crystal, so you need that sticker there because I'm going to put a kli on the table, they'll think I got an amazing savings. But now that it says the creme de la creme, so now they know that I spent $200 for it, or at least they'll think I spent $200 for it. So that's a sticker that you're not makbid on. Other rabbi, you're makbid that it should be there. So of course it doesn't have to come off originally. But anything you are makbid on, or as they point out, anything you theoretically would be makbid on, but you scrub as much as you can and the stain doesn't come off. So you're willing to use it as is, so you're not makbid on it. Okay. There is a machlokus between the Gra and the Chaber, I think, in Simon Reish Beis, as to whether or not a thin layer of blackness over the whole kli is a problem. Because on the one hand, you're not makbid, but on the other hand, it's on the whole kli. And as is well known, the rules of chatzitza are Rov ha-makbid is deraisa, Rov she'ena makbid is derabanan, Miyot ha-makbid is derabanan, and Miyot she'ena makbid is mutter. So what if you have shachruris, some kind of black layer, like it's on a very old kli, all over it, or over rov? So the Gra says, tough. Scrub, 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 and if it doesn't come off, so you can't be tovel it, because it's over rov. Who cares if you're not makbid? And many we've shown him, and that's the psaka that I think of the Mechaber, that's just considered mara ba'alma, and it's not a problem. I seems that the lenient position of the Mechaber was accepted. And I mean, if old Kalim, or as Rabbi Willig mentioned, if you're sneaking and the Vingtovel family Kalim, so how clean do you have to get it? So that's important to keep that, I guess, that leniency in mind. Okay, yeah, sorry.
If you have a sticker and you're not mad about it at all, so you leave it on, but it, later from usage it comes off, so then you feel, would you have to be tovel at that point?
Pashtus not. It's like we give the parallel to chasnida. Let's say you have a chatzitz that al pi halacha is not makbid, but it came off. A little dirt under the nail, a drop, as the post can point out, or as the Chochma Sodom has, very important to halacha l'maisa, about those little pieces of skin, like the one I'm taking now, they're not a chatzitza. So even if it falls off later, it's not retroactively a chatzitza. Okay. That's why it's good if you run a mikveh to leave a little, goo gone there, because people forget to take care of this in advance. So it's not always so posh to get rid of the stickers at the mikveh. So you take care of it at home, or have some kind of what do they call it? Either goo gone or acetone does a good trick, nail polish remover. But pure acetone is even stronger. That usually does the trick. Okay, that's so much here, in terms of the mitzvah itself.
Real quick, I mean, besides the expensive sticker, is your das bottle to everyone else? Be just lazy and just say, I'll keep it on forever, I don't care?
So here, someone has to write a shtikl Torah in the Beis Yitzchak on this. When do we say bot the daito eitz koladam, and when do we not? So chatzitza is when we're machmir both ways. If you're machbid, the whole world's not, it is a chatzitza. And if you're not machbid and the whole world is, it is a chatzitza. Someone has to write, when do we say botla and don't we? And there must be some kind of rule here, otherwise it sounds very arbitrary. Okay, the bracha, which is of course recited at the tevila, the Mechaber quotes, although not unanimously accepted, from Tosis and Itzv Heter, that on one kli you say al tevilas keli. I think that's the proper diktuk. In Chassidish they say keli, but so I think that's what it says in Parshas Chukas, Mayim Chaim el keli, and of course the plural is tevilas kelim. The Aruch HaShulchan writes we always say kelim. So that's a debate, whether or not we follow that at Aruch HaShulchan. His meaning, we always say Kalim. But the Mechaber has that split. Tefilas Keli, Tefilas Kalim. So I'm not sure which is which. It probably depends on what sign there is in the Mikveh. The way an Adam Gadol pointed out once, he said, after you learn all the Vilchus Malicha, so now how do you salt the chicken? So you read the box. Okay, so that's a machlokus between the Mechaber and the Aruch HaShulchan. As to what do you say with only one Kli? So here the post can point out, even those who are following the Mechaber, what if you have a pot and its lid? Maybe that's enough of a svara to say al tefilas kelim, because even though it's really one, but two parts, some say always say tefilas kelim, say tefilas kelim. What if you're being tovel avadically and asufically, as is often the case, something that's coated or something that's a suffic glass, or certainly those who are being machmed tovel china, it's certainly only a suffic. So, but you're being tovel together with it, as the post can recommend, a metal or a glass vadai chayev kli. So they say there too, since you're being tovel, bottom line, more than one, even though one's a vadai, one's a suffix, so you should say al tefilas kelim. Just to round it off, not everyone agreed that you say a bracha altogether. The Ritva Masechet Avodah Zarah holds it's a matir, it's not a mitzvah, so you don't say a bracha, just like you don't say a bracha on Hagolah. And the Rambam also sounds that way. The Rambam says this is the way you make it mutter. He never says it's a mitzvah. He never says you make a bracha. But the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote any cholkim on this. He just says you say a bracha. He doesn't even treat it as a suffix. And that's, of course, the minigol. Okay. In Sif Dalid and Hey, the Mechaber discusses the core of Chi of Tvila. It has to touch the food, and it has to be something that's used for Gemar HaTashmish. That we'll discuss with Hashem on Thursday. So that I'm going to leave out for now. I want to discuss some of the lesser delved into topics. Maimid, Mashkin, and Uman. As we'll develop a little further on Thursday with Hashem, Rabbi Willig already alluded to it in the name of the Shev Yaakov. There's a machlokes aposkim as to whether or not Tevilas Kelim depends on the laws of Kabbalah's Tumah. So one of the aspects where that emerges is the issue of Mamid. There are two machlokes concerning Mamid in the Gemara. One, I think both in Masechta Shabbos, but in different places. I don't remember the Dapim. One is a case where something allows the Kli to have structure. Without the Maimid, then everything would collapse. So an example of that is a wooden barrel that is held together by metal bands. That's Maimid. Another example of Maimid is where you fill in a hole. Let's say you have a wooden Kli that you fill in with metal to stop up the hole. Those are separate issues of Maimid, which might actually have separate Pesachim, La Halacha. I pointed out just for further Iyun. So the Mechaber in Sifvav quotes in the name of Tosfos in Masechta Avodah Zarah that Maimid is not relevant for Tefillas Kelim. Because even if you insist that Tefillas Kelim is Tali on the laws of Tumah, but here it's Tali on Kli Sa'uda. And since the Sa'uda, you eat it mi bifnim, and that's wood, if you, again, going back to that barrel, that has metal bands around it. So even if we would paskin that Maimid is Mekabel Tumah as metal, so you should treat it as a Kli Matris, so the Mechaber paskins like Tosis that here it's not considered metal for purpose of Tefillas Kelim, because the Tashmish is Bifnim, and there it's all wood. The Shach quotes that the Beis Yosef himself was Choshesh for the minority, other Rishonim, who held that no, you follow Maimid, and therefore it's Chayiv. So that's why the Shach recommends to be Tovel such a case without a Bracha. The case of Maimid. We'll see, it'll come up later as well. Let's move on to Mashkin. We mentioned this briefly in the first Chabura, the name of the Vilna Gaon, that this is one of the riots that it's totally on just Shem Yisrael, not necessarily on Bailus. So you have to put together two Seifim, the Mechaber breaks between them, I'm not sure why, Siftes, Sifyat Aleph. The Gemara has a suffix concerning Mashkin, whether it's Chayiv and Tefillas Kelim. And the meaning, a non-Jew gives a mashkin to a Jew, is the Jew chayiv and tefillas kelim for that mashkin, if he wants to use it. So the Gemara indicates that if it's clear that the non-Jew, or it's pretty clear that the non-Jew wants to be mishakeit, mashkiet, you know, that he's not going to pay, he's going to forfeit the mashkin, so then you have to be tovel it, so it'll be with a bracha. And if it's a suffix whether or not he's going to leave it with you, so that remains in a bayah, the law of Shita and the Gemara, as to whether or not a mashkin is kisvini. As the Gra points out, that the issue is because you might not actually need bailus. It might be enough to have Shem Yisrael, which you might have with a mashkin. So once you know that Gemara, so then the Mechaber's Pesach follows straightforward. If it's pretty certain that the guy is going to leave it with you, so then you have a tovel with a bracha. If you're not certain, so then you tovel without a bracha. So then the Taz and the Shach have machlokis, and what if you are certain that he's not leaving it over with you? In other words, he's definitely going to redeem it. So the Shach says, then you don't have to be tovel it altogether, presumably because then I guess it doesn't even have a Shem Yisrael in it. And the Taz writes, no, that then you also have to be tovel it without a bracha. The only time that you wouldn't have to be, the Mashkin always needs to feel it without a bracha, unless he intends to leave it with you, or looks like he intends to leave it with you, then you tovel with a bracha. So that's the case of Mashkin.
Is that because the Gemara says, you know, my father had left a silver cup and...
That's that case, right. Yeah. He didn't know what the reason of the Svara was. In Sifyat Aleph, the Mechaber says the other way is not a problem. If Yisrael gives a Mashkin to a Goy, and then he redeems it, so you might think that was like a Jew selling a Kli to a non-Jew and then buying it back, which is Chayiv and Tefillah. So the Mechaber writes, no. So when it goes the other direction, Yisrael to Goy as a Mashkin, and then you take it back, it's not Chayiv at all. Why not? Why don't you say the same thing? If Mashkin is somehow Kizvini regarding Tevilas Kelim, so it should be a problem also. It should be Tovel, at least believe Bracha. So the some Rachronim suggest that Baal Chov Kona Mashkin from Yisrael to a Goy, but he's not Kona Mashkin from a Goy to Yisrael. But Poskim point out, they quote the Gra and others, that that's not the proper analysis here. Because La Halacha, we Poskim, that Baal Chov ain't a Kona Mashkin, not from a Jew of a goy and not from a goy of a Jew. Neither way is kind of mashkin. So what's the whole analysis here? So the Gra says, very beautiful word, he says that in order for something to be chayiv in Tevilas Kelim, it has to be owned by a non-Jew. And then it has to acquire Shem Yisrael. So regarding the base, it has to be owned by a non-Jew. But you know where it's coming from, the origin. But regarding the destination, all you need is Shem Yisrael. You don't need ownership. So if you have a Jewish kli and you give it to a non-Jew as a mashkin, the guy was never kona because Baal Chov ain't a kind of mashkin. So the fact that maybe it has Shem Akum on it doesn't matter because it's not his. That's the Lashon of the Gra. Tzarech Lios Legamri. That's the Gra in Sifkot and Lamed. But in order for you as the recipient to be chayiv in Tevilas Kelim, it's enough to have Shem Yisrael Kemaisa Shehoya and a kli midjan. Even leaving aside the Kenyan Kibish Mochama, even without Kibish Mochama, once they had those Kalim, the Shem Yisrael was on it, even if they didn't own it. So that's why, regarding a mashkin, when you have a Goyisha Kli and you want to be Tova and you want to use it, so then even if you're not Konet, they might have Shem Yisrael, you might have to be Tova it. And if the guy wants to leave it with you, then you have to be Tova it even with a bracha, or at least looks that way. But when you give it over to a guy, then you don't have to be Tova it because the guy never owned it. Okay? That's the case of mashkin. Now we finish up with Uman. Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Tzvi Sobolovsky pointed out that this was halacha lemaisa, although normally it doesn't come up that often, but Uman kona b'shvach kli, in this regard, how oftentimes do you repair silver with a non-Jew, repair kelim with a non-Jew? Most of the silversmiths dealing with Jewish kelim are Jewish. But okay, sometimes it can come up. Here again, we have a machlokis as to whether or not the dinim of Tevilas Kelim should follow the general rules or specific rules. As is well known, the Gemara in Baba Kama, that where it is, Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, the ninth parak, machlokis whether Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli or not. So, in usually people don't learn from the ninth parak of Baba Kama, they get it from Kiddushin and from other angles, all of the other ramifications.
I think it's in a goes late.
So the Rishonim also Tosfos is lenient in this position. Tosfos says that even if you hold Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, it's irrelevant to Hilchos Tevilas Kelim. What would be the case? I give my Jewish kli over, my fully owned kli that's now broken, to a non-Jew to repair. So now he repairs it and he has a shtikel kinyan. Right, Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, it's Kona the Shvach with respect to being able to demand his money back, etc. So should I say that that's enough of a kinyan to now make me chayiv again when I pay him his price and get my kli back, or not? The Tosfos is not enough. That's not enough. Legabe Tevilas Kelim, it has to be totally shel akum in order to be chayiv. Yes.
Is that because of kablonis that basically say
it's only kablonis, correct? Not poel.
Right.
Because only a poel, only an uman is kind of shvachli, not a poel. So you're paying by the job, not by the hour.
Not by the hour, right.
We'll see an important Chachma Sodom in that regard, in the Pischei Tshuva, and Moshe also has on that. I'll add that on in a second. So the Mechaber here is also Mekel, that Lactosis. And here the Ramah, although by Mamid the Ramah was silent, you had to wait till the Shach piped up and said you should be Tovah without a Bracha, the Ramah himself writes that Sama Cholek on this and hold that Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, even with respect to Tevilas Kelim, and therefore, you should be tova without a bracha, in the bottom line. So then the Ramah adds, and let's say the non-Jew adds a little bit of his own silver. In other words, you didn't supply the silver, he added his own. So the Ramah writes, so then your tova sounds like with a bracha. Why? What's the analysis here? Because the silver is his, right? So now when you're giving him the money to get that kli back, you're paying for his service, and you're paying for his silver. So what you had originally is you had a kli that was owned with a partnership of you and the goy, and now you're buying it totally. So that's chayiv with a bracha. Like Mechaber writes in Sifir Aleph that a partnership between a Jew and a non-Jew is not chayiv in tefillah. But the Shach points out, but if you buy it from the partnership, and now you totally own it, then you're chayiv. So that's the simple pshat in the Ramah. That when the goy adds his own metal, so it becomes like a shutfis, even leaving aside a kind of a shvach kli, and then when you buy it from him, so you're chayiv because of that little prat there. Okay, so then they point out it's a little somewhat more complex because let's say there was a hole in the kli, and the guy added in a the guy fixed the hole, or he added his own metal into the hole. So what halacha does that have? That's halacha of a maimed. So he have the coming together of the maimed together with the uman. Okay, so that's that's one of the complicated issues that I'll leave for your own study in the shachmat. So the halacha, the mechaber paskins uman ain't okay to be shvach kli with respect to tvilas kelim, even if in general it is. And the Ramah is machin b'tov l'ad bracha. What if a Jew bought raw materials from a non-Jew and made a kli? So is that chayiv in tvilas kelim or not? Because on the one hand it's non-Jewish material, but on the other hand it's not a non-Jewish kli. So the Ramah writes it's potter because the Jew made the kli. Doesn't depend on the raw materials, depends on the kli itself. The kli has to be a non-Jewish kli in order to be chayiv. What if the non-Jew broke the kli that was originally owned by a non-Jew, and now he repaired it? Right? Not an issue of uman. He broke the kli, he's keeping it the whole time. He's not giving it back to anyone. He broke the kli and now he repaired it. Can you extend that Ramah there as well? The Ramah was talking about raw materials. But what if you're not dealing with raw materials, you're dealing with a real kli? Let's say it comes up, a massive kli that you can't be tovel in the mikveh unless you go to the Atlantic Ocean with a crane. So some posts can say you puncture a nice solid hole in the bottom, and then you have a Jewish welder solder it again. And it's based on this Ramah. You're making the kli. But it's not so glut. The Taz points out that's not enough. That's you have to actually make the kli. But Rov HaPoskim, I think, do not hold like that, Taz. They hold that it's perfectly valid for a Jew to break a kli in a way that's unusable and then make it again, and that's called Nasa Yisrael. That's ultimately the basis of that kula, the Snapple bottles, right? One of the you made it into a kli, because before it wasn't, and now you made it, even though you didn't do anything. But just, you gave it the shame kli. And then the Ramah writes that the other way also is going to follow the same pattern. Let's say a non-Jew gives you raw materials to make a kli for him. He says, make me a goblet or something. So you make the goblet, and then you say, you know, this is pretty nice. I can use it for Kiddush. Can I buy it from you I'll just pay you for the raw materials and I'll buy it. So the Ramah writes that according to the Mechaber, Uman Koyin Mishvachli is not relevant here. So we have a standard case of a non-Jewish kli, which is now purchased by a Jew, so it's chayiv in tefillah with a bracha. But since the Ramah is choshesh to uman kona b'shvach kli, so here he says that in that case you're tovel without a bracha, because it could be you a kona as the uman, and now you'd only be tovel with a bracha if you buy it from him. Okay, so that's the issue of uman kona b'shvach kli. So the Chazon Ish is quoted in the Sefer Tefillas Kelim, writes, well, if you're dealing with non-Jews, so the normative practice, you have to follow Din al-Machusa in monetary areas. So you got to check what the United States law is concerning Uman Koyin B'Shvach Kli, and then see how that's going to play out here. So here's what I had on Machlokus, is one of my Chaverim, who's much wiser than I am. But I still think I'm right, so you'll be the judge. Everyone's used to learning Uman Koyin B'Shvach Kli with Kiddushin and the fancy razzle-dazzle nafkaminas. What's the basic machlokus of Uman Koyin B'Shvach Kli? That's to do with achrayus.
Right.
That means that I give my shoes to the shoemaker, I give him dilapidated shoes that's worth $5 as it is. And then he puts in the nails and whatever and the labor, and now the shoes are worth $25. And now the shoe store burns to the ground, along with my $5/$25 shoes, because he already fixed them. How much does he have to pay me? Assuming he has to pay me, assuming there was a pshia or whatever. So if you hold Uman Koyin B'Shvach Kli, so he tells me, listen, buddy, I'm paying you $5 because the $20, that's Uman Koyin B'Shvach Kli, that's my shvach, and when you pay for your shoes, then you'll get it. But if you hold ain't Uman Koyin B'Shvach Kli, so it's my kli all along, aroi yishtabach, if you will, a plan, when my shoes became greater, so now my shoes are worth $25, so he has to pay me $25. Okay, I'll pay him for the work or whatever, $5, and then I get the better of the deal. So the Chazon Ish writes, let's plug it into American law. So he doesn't say how to plug it in. No, and what do you think American law is going to say about that case? They're going to make the shoemaker chayav $5 or $25? I find it very hard to imagine that they're going to make the shoemaker pay $25. They'll probably only make him pay $5. So what does that mean? That means as far as American law is concerned, which way? Uman Koyin B'Shvach Kli, the Lamdish way. This was a friend of mine who... Someone asked him this shaila. He gave a kiddush cup over to a non-Jewish artisan to fix. Does he have to be tovel it again? So according to the Mechaber, no. The whole Shaila is not a Shaila. But according to Ramah, at least believe Bracha. But then he dug up that Chazon Ish and said, well, we don't have to worry about that anymore because we follow American law. Yeah, if you follow American law, so then it exactly plugs into the Ramah, that Uman Kon Vishvach Kli, and he said, totally Bracha. So again, Halacha, I'm a proponent that Halacha has not changed in this regard. That Uman is still Kon Vishvach Kli, if you follow the Chazon Ish, because other Rabbi Dinal Machusa seems to have it that way. I think I shared this cheshbon with one of my Rebbeim. I think he agreed with me, but okay. He is choshish for it in other areas, but here he defers to Tosis that it's not relevant to Tvilas Kalim because it's not enough of a bailus to call it a kalishal akum with respect to the laws of Tvilas Kalim specifically. Even though Lagabe Kiddushin and in other areas, he is choshish for that position. It is an unresolved question in general whether Umukon Shvach Kli, but the Mechaber is choshish in other areas, but here he's not because he says here it's going to be different. So Rav Moshe Feinstein notes that all this is only relevant to an Uman. It's not relevant to a Poel, because a Poel is not Konan. So if you have a Jewish factory with non-Jewish workers, that's a Jewish Kli. And if you have a non-Jewish factory with Jewish workers, that's a non-Jewish Kli. So the case in a non-Jewish factory, you tovel with a bracha, you don't have to be choshes Yisramah. In the case of a Jewish factory, you don't have to tovel at all. So that means, let's say you have an Israeli company that hires Arab workers. So it's still not tovel it. That's what he points out, that a poel is not an uman. Now there is a Chochma Sadam that's quoted by the Pitzchei Tshuva, who writes a hota. A hota is some kind of factory where they make glass, and you have poelim who are not Jewish. So the Chochma Sadam is worried that maybe you should say uman koine b'shvach kli. So they point out, why should it be koine b'shvach kli? It's poelim. So they point out that probably the Chochma Sadam was talking about non-Jews who were being paid by the job and not by the hour. In other words, he said Poelim, but he meant Umanim. There's Umanim that work for him. So the Chochma Sadam says, well, since the Mechaber and the Ramah slog it out, so if you're dealing with glass is Derabbanan, Safek Derabbanan Lekula. So that's what he... But that Kula would only work if you're dealing with real Umanim. But if you're dealing with Poelim, you have a Jewish factory, non-Jewish workers... So it's not a shayla at all. You don't have to be told at all. And the other way, if you have a non-Jewish factory and Jewish workers, so it's also not a shayla. You definitely have to be told it. So Rav Moshe finds and points out, you don't say uman koneh shvach kli by Paul. But then there's a curious Chochma Sadam, which everyone says must be a mistake. There must be a typo there, because the Chochma Sadam says, and let's say you have a non-Jewish factory owner and Jewish workers, and then it's glass. So since it's a shayla uman koneh b'shvach kli, so you don't have to be told it. He said, doesn't make any sense. Let's say it was uman koneh b'shvach kli. Let's say they were umanim. But then they coughed it up. The non-Jewish factory owner pays the salary. He gets back the kelim. It's totally his. And now he sells it to a Jew. So of course he chayiv in tevila. So Chochma Sadam sounds like it can go both ways in that regard. In the case of the factory, they all point out that when you have a non-Jewish factory owner, you can't apply that kula, even with glass. Because the Jewish workers, even if you say they were koneh b'shvach kli, but they gave it back to the non-Jewish factory owner. So that kula, even though it's quoted by the Pitzchei Tshuva, he wasn't mafakbik on it, but the other posts can say, but you can't rely on that, for sure not. But again, it has very little relevance, because most people work on the poel pay scale.
I think somebody did piecework. That's what they did.
Piecework, okay.
Like making shoes.
Right, okay, very good. All right, just a few other topics remaining.
Rabbi, can I just say?
Yeah, go ahead.
I forgot that I had this a long time ago. The Bava Kama, the Kaplan is it like the case in Ezeru Deshet that they make a kidney because of Shia, then the guy actually owns it, so he'll take more care of it?
The whole sugi is not fresh. I'm just reviewing it from this form.
Okay.
I'm sure it's good, but I can't think straight on that now. The Mechaber writes, as Rabbi Willig already alluded to, based on the Avni Nezer, but based on the Shulchan Aruch, we paskin that you cannot be tovel kelim on Shabbos. The Mechaber in Or Chaim seems to be no to lahokel, but here he says that he's so same lahachmir. And that's the Ashkenazi Tzak for sure, that you can't be tovel kelim on Shabbos. So what do you do? So one Eitzah is a whole harama where you fill it up with water and you make believe you're dipping in the mikvah for a different reason, but that's not so practical. The main Eitzah is to be makne to a goy and borrow it again. And you could even do it on Shabbos because it's a tzorach on Shabbos, a tzorach mitzvah. So what's, how does that work? Because it's, because the halacha, as we'll elaborate more about Hashem on Thursday, the only chayiv in Tfilas Kalim when you own it, or at least you have Shem Yisrael alav. If it's just borrowed, it's not Shem Yisrael alav. So what I wanted to just mention is a very important taz. Taz writes, did we mention this in the first Chabura? Maybe we did. Forgive me if I'm repeating myself. The Taz writes that it only works short term, not long term. Because if you borrow it for a very long time, then you have Shem Yisrael alav. Just as you have by Mashkin. So that's a question, whether or not in certain kalim that is very difficult to be tovel, can you be makna to a goy and borrow it long term? So the Taz says no. And other poskim are not convinced that that Taz is correct. They hold it's different. A mashkin is different. You could borrow it long term. So they speak about a harama, but if there's no other way to do it, so you're stuck with a harama. So but according to the Taz, the Eitz just doesn't work because it's going to be chayiv if you have it long term. That's a practical way of doing this. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, they quote a story about Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. He was stuck in the mountains right before Shabbos. So they had a few hours, but they couldn't make it to the hotel. So they brought up some kalim and maybe a little stove, etc., to make food. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik carefully explained to the clerk at the Walmart that I am not buying these kalim. I am just giving you the money. It's the same difference, but this is technically Walmart kli. So that would be even before Shabbos comes, you could do that in that way. Okay, see those who will be in attendance on Thursday, Mr. Shem, 2:00.